This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A Kentucky law that allows for involuntary treatment of people facing addiction is now being challenged as unconstitutional. The Matthew Casey Wethington Act for Substance Abuse Intervention was passed in 2004. It's being challenged on three grounds: violation of due process, equal protection, and First Amendment rights. At issue is whether individuals who are addicted can be forced to give up the right to govern their own lives, thus being denied the liberty which is guaranteed by law. So joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about Casey's law is Kentucky's public advocate with the Department of Public Advocacy, Damon Preston. Damon, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
We also hope to connect with Christ Hospital Physicians Family Medicine Dr. Mike Kalfas very soon. We are having a technical difficulty with that, but we do hope to have him on the line as well. He works in Northern Kentucky on issues related to addiction, and so we do hope to add him. Before we dive into the legal case, and I know there are limited conversations to be had about this sealed challenge on constitutional grounds of Casey's law, Damon, would you mind just informing me and our audience what the public advocate does?
Sure. The public advocate in Kentucky is the head of our statewide public defender system. We have offices throughout the state of Kentucky. We provide counsel for any criminal or, in this case, infringement on liberty that a court would want to impose. If the person has a right to counsel, we fulfill that right. So we handle about 160,000 cases a year that are mostly criminal, but also some Casey's law and other cases.
So let's talk about Casey's law from your perspective. This is a law that's been on the books now for about 16 years. We got to know it more intimately over the past decade as, unfortunately, heroin overdoses spiked in our part of the country, as well as other parts of the country. And this was used as a tool to help those who may not be willing to help themselves or even understand that they might need to help themselves. What's your position on Casey's law?
I think Casey's law fills an important gap in our system in relating to addiction and individuals who are fighting substance use disorder. The problem that we have, and we have a number of issues with the law the way it's written, is simply that the law needs to be improved. We do not believe it's effective the way that it is written now. It was written, as you said, in 2004. It's been on the books for 16 years with no changes. There was a wording change 2 years ago, but no policy, substantive, procedural changes in 16 years. And the fact is, we've learned a lot in the last 16 years about addiction. And Casey's law was written at a time when the view towards how to deal with drug addiction was, we'll drag somebody before court, we'll make a judge point a finger at them and say, you've got to go to treatment, and if they don't, we'll stick them in jail. That's not the way we need to deal with addiction now. We know that doesn't work. And so most of our objections to Casey's law are simply we want to improve it. But overall, something like this is needed, and I hope it can get better.
If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're joined on the phone by Kentucky's public advocate with the Department of Public Advocacy, Damon Preston. And I believe we are now also joined on Zoom by Christ Hospital Physicians Family Medicine Dr. Mike Kalfas. Dr. Kalfas, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Actually, I would like to make one quick correction. I now work at St. Elizabeth Healthcare, and I actually work in addiction medicine solely. So,
well, we do apologize for not checking out your LinkedIn, I guess, before we went on the air that you have switched hospital systems. Let me cross this out on my script. And you are with St. Elizabeth now. That is perfectly fine.
The Journey Recovery Center at St. Elizabeth Hospital. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Well, then, regardless, I believe even when you were with Christ, were you based in Northern Kentucky?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so you still are. And let's talk about Northern Kentucky addiction and the role that Casey's law has played in the region's attempts to remedy as best it can that spike in heroin overdoses that we were experiencing and that we have reportedly been experiencing during this COVID-19 pandemic. From a medical perspective, how do you view the significance of something like Casey's law?
Well, I think I have a unique perspective on that, and I'll try to be as quick, as concise as I can. But I actually treated Casey. His mother would not mind me saying that. And I was one of the physicians that told her that I was powerless to do anything because he was over 21 years old. I've been practicing addiction medicine in Northern Kentucky since 1997. And I watched young people, mostly young people, some older, dropping like flies, for lack of a better way to put it. And I could see that they were, in many, many cases, you know, refusing treatment because they were afraid of withdrawal. They were afraid they wouldn't be treated appropriately. And they would avoid treatment, even at the cost of going to jail. Then they try to get out of jail. We tried to use imprisonment as a method of treatment, and jail is not treatment. But sometimes it's the sum of their consequences that will facilitate a person being willing to go into treatment. You know, that's a common denominator among the addicted. But one of the things that I noticed real early on is for people with severe disease, they weren't making a rational decision. And when you sit and talk with them, they were incapable of making a rational making any rational decisions when it came to those kinds of issues. They weren't afraid of death. They were afraid of withdrawal. And that's a common hallmark for someone in active addiction. Now, maybe when they step out of it for a little bit and recover, they think differently or they act differently. But in the throes of their addiction, they're more afraid of withdrawal and being sick than they are of death. And that's not rational. You know, and you start to see parallels between a suicidal patient or a mental health patient that is not able to provide for their own safety or be safe to be in society on their own because of the damage they can cause by not thinking clearly, not acting rationally. And there's a lot of parallels between that and someone in active drug addiction, especially heroin. So I've always been all for the idea that, look, if there needs to be something to help get these folks into a legitimate treatment without it having to be a coercion because the judge has three felonies racked up against them and is going to lock them up, this is a much nicer, you know, they have to wait till they get a felony charge to force them into treatment. We can have them evaluated by an appropriate health professional. And that's the key. You have to have an evaluation by an appropriate, you know, physician and therapist. And one of those has to have expertise dealing with addictions. So you're getting a balanced report on somebody. And then you go before a judge and the judge weighs in the merits of the claim and the merits of the report, and gives the person an alternative: go to treatment or be in contempt. No felony charge that's going to haunt them later and limit their recovery as far as getting a job and entering society. We don't have to go through that. I've seen it refused. I've seen poorly done cases that the judge said, no, this is incorrect. So if you follow it to the letter and follow it through, it's an extremely helpful tool. But again, the conditions have to be met. Now, when we get into the treatment side of things, I heard the gentleman speaking before me make the comment that we've learned a lot, and that's certainly true. We've learned a lot. And I will be honest in saying that treatment or providers, organizations, modalities, in 2004, there were very little agreement between the various entities providing treatment. You know, there was, you know, some people would be medically assisted treatment is evil. Others would say only medically assisted treatment. And I think we're evolving to a point where we try to find out what the patient needs and best suit their needs. We realize addiction will be a lifelong illness that they'll battle, just like type 2 diabetes, that we may control, but it will always be there underlying if we let the control lapse. And I think treatment is moving along. The adequate use of Casey's Law, of course, is going to be contingent on the adequate availability of appropriate treatment modalities and facilities. And we are a little lagging in that regard. And I would say that's what needs to be brought up to speed. That's one of the reasons I switched jobs recently, is that to dedicate my time 100% to treating addiction instead of just, you know, combining it in my family practice, which I wasn't being as effective as I wanted to be.
And we are talking right now with Dr. Mike Kalfas. He is with St. Elizabeth Physicians, where he is an addiction medicine physician. We were joined by Kentucky's public advocate with the Department of Public Advocacy, Damon Preston, but I think we've dropped that call by some sort of technical error, so we'll work to reconnect with him and bring him back on to gain this perspective. He is with the Department of Public Advocacy, and there is a challenge on this law, the Matthew Casey Wethington Act for Substance Abuse Intervention, commonly referred to as Casey's Law. And as you heard Dr. Kalfas say, Dr. Kalfas treated the namesake of this piece of legislation in Kentucky, this law in Kentucky. It was passed in 2004, and it is still a critical piece of the advocacy work by Charlotte Wethington, Casey's mother. And as you noted, Dr. Kalfas, Charlotte Wellington, this is what you said, that she would not mind you mentioning that you treated her son back in those days when he was struggling with his addiction process.
Absolutely not.
What role do you see this law playing? Because as we noted, this is from 2004. We really experienced what was commonly referred to as a heroin epidemic in more recent years. What role has this law played in maybe improving the situation?
I do think prior to the COVID-19 crisis, we were actually finally starting to see a decrease in overdoses. We were finally taking the edge off of it. I think we've been thrown backwards just by, you know, the helter-skelter nature of the lockdowns and, you know, but every aspect of healthcare has suffered from that. I mean, you couldn't get your mammogram, you couldn't get, you know, people were reticent to go to the emergency room because, you know, they were afraid, you know, their family couldn't go in with them and they were afraid of being in the hospital and catching something that they didn't already have. And, you know, so addiction's no different. We've seen an uptick in relapses and overdoses due to the COVID-19. But prior to that, the 2 years prior, we were seeing a steady decrease. We were seeing, I'll tell you one thing that I saw different is just the mention of Casey's Law. I'll do a couple evaluations a week. And my last several sitting in front of me doing the evaluation, they would say, "I'll do treatment, doc." You know, the fact that someone cared enough to go through the trouble of filing a court case to get them to seek help, what was, yeah, I mentioned a minute ago, the culmination of your consequences or experiences being the thing that prompts you to go into treatment. For some people, that was the wake-up call, that mom was willing to go to this length to do it. They sit down and talk to me and said, "Yeah, I do have a problem. Can you help me?" And when I say, "Yeah, we could do A, B, and C," or, you know, I put them in the right direction, a lot of times they're willing to do it. We don't even have to finish the court case. I got a couple that are being just kind of held in limbo right now is the patients in treatment. So it's been a great tool. It's one of the worst things for the family members of these patients is watching their loved one just dwindle and being powerless to stop it. Just watching this bright, promising young student that they raised just withering away and dying slowly every day. These parents are stuck. They have no recourse. Then their child gets a felony charge and another felony charge. Then the judge sentences them through a SAP program to get treatment, which is overcrowded and maybe not necessarily be tailored. It's prompted people to willingly go into treatment on their own, realizing that I don't want to be sent somewhere for 6 months. Well, maybe you don't need to. If you're willing to work on this, maybe we can help you. I think the opposition often sees it as we're trying to intrude on people's rights. And as Charlotte and I have had the discussion before, no, we're trying to give them back their right to keep breathing because, you know, we know where this ends. And it's not an affront to someone's ability to make a free choice. By the time they're being directed to treatment through Casey's Law, they've lost the ability to make that decision.
And again,
and that's how it should be viewed when you're filing it. And the judge should be looking at that, I think, when they're weighing on the case.
And the reference to Charlotte again is Charlotte Wethington, the mother of Matthew Casey Wethington, the namesake of what we commonly refer to as Casey's Law. We are reconnected now with Damon Preston, Kentucky's public advocate with the Department of Public Advocacy. Damon, I do apologize for that technical glitch that we had where we dropped you briefly, but I think you've been listening on the most recent comments there by Dr. Kalfas of St. Elizabeth Healthcare. And I'd like to just get you to respond about that, where he's sort of addressed what he sees as some folks' concerns, but says that it is not an infringement on liberty.
I'll respond to that, and then I'll also respond to the other comments as well.
Sure.
So it certainly is an infringement of rights. That's unquestionable. The question to be asked is it a okay infringement on rights? Is this an opportunity for the government to step in an appropriate way and in a justifiable way? Our position is that standard should be high. If the government is going to take an adult who has not been charged with any crime and infringe on their liberty and eventually put them in jail, the standard for that should be very high. Under Casey's Law, as it's written, the standard is almost the lowest standard in all of the law. It's probable cause. The judge needs to just figure out that probably there's a problem here. That standard should be much higher. And I agree probably with 97% of what Dr. Kalfas has said, but he's talking about the cases that could absolutely be made under Casey's Law with the much higher standard. If someone is in the active throes of addiction and is harming themselves, they absolutely could qualify under a more stringent standard than Casey's Law. But the current law doesn't allow that. In addition to the burden of proof being so low, there is no requirement that the treatment that a judge ordered be even appropriate to the person. The law says nothing about what kind of treatment will be ordered. It simply allows a judge to order treatment. And while the evaluations are required, which is a positive part of the requirement, only one needs to be from someone who is actually qualified in addiction. In one of the cases that is going on right now, one of the evaluations came from an osteopath. He was a doctor, just the family knew him. He wrote a very vague description about the hazards of using drugs, and that was counted as one of the evaluations. But beyond that, even if you've got two qualified evaluations, there's no requirement that the court actually follow the recommendations. The recommendations could simply be used to make the case that treatment's necessary, and then treatment could be ordered that's completely inappropriate. Many of our clients have dual diagnosis where they have a substance use disorder. They also have perhaps a medical problem, another medical problem, or a mental health problem. There's no requirement that the judge issue appropriate orders. And when the judge issues an order, there is no recourse for the addict to challenge that order. They have to go. And so in some of our cases, and Michael, you mentioned in the introduction that there's a First Amendment aspect to this. In some of these cases, the judge is familiar with the local faith-based treatment program, and there's no regard for the personal beliefs of the addict. And so you might have someone that's of another religion or of no religion at all that's ordered to attend a 12-step program in the basement of a church that requires religious participation as a to complete a program, and there's nothing in Casey's Law that prevents that from happening. So, I think Dr. Kalfas is right. This can be a tool in the appropriate cases. The problem is it's written so broadly that there can be many inappropriate cases that fall into Casey's Law.
Okay, so we've just got about a minute left, so I want to share 30 seconds between, for each of you, 30 seconds just to sort of wind this down. But I first want to cite some reporting from Terry DeMio at the Cincinnati Enquirer, who explains the situation involving Casey's Law, where the case is being challenged from a constitutional standpoint on a variety of grounds, as we stated earlier, violation of due process, equal protection, and the First Amendment, as you just heard Damon Preston reference there. Attorney General Daniel Cameron said from the state's perspective, this compulsory component of this law has actually already been decided by the Kentucky Supreme Court and passed Kentucky law. So, quote, we stand firmly on those grounds as we defend this matter. 30 seconds, Dr. Kalfas, are you open to supporting some changes to this law?
Certainly. We can always make everything better. I think what we need to attack is the treatment. We need to get a consolidation among treatment facilities, treatment providers. We need to have an agreed upon course. It needs to be based on best practices. And to that extent, you know, most mental health facilities are now undergoing like CARF accreditation or JACHO accreditation. And it should be an accredited, bona fide treatment program. You know, to say that it followed to the T probably is not included in Casey's Law. You have to, your evaluation should, at least in my case, when I do them, that I have to state that they have this problem, that it's severe enough to require treatment, and that what I'm recommending is the least restrictive, likely successful form of treatment. And that's what the judge should be following. So at that point, I don't see a problem. Now, if it's misused in individual and incidences, that's not an excuse to throw the baby out with the bathwater, in my opinion.
Okay. And Damon Preston, who is the public advocate for Kentucky, last thoughts from you.
I have great respect for General Cameron, but he's wrong on this issue. This case has not been decided. Casey's Law has never been litigated. It was rarely used until about 5 years ago. And then advocates for the law began a public relations campaign and a public education campaign. So the numbers of cases of petitions brought under Casey's Law has really spiked in the last 5 years, which I'm sure the advocates see it as a positive step in addressing the spike in addictions. But that has raised the scenario where we have to challenge it to make sure this law complies with the Constitution. It has never been challenged. It has never been upheld. And my hope is the Supreme Court points out the flaws and that the legislature corrects those flaws the next time it has the opportunity.
I want to thank both of you, public advocate of Kentucky within the Department of Public Advocacy, Damon Preston, and from St. Elizabeth Healthcare, Dr. Mike Kalfas. Dr. Kalfas, Damon, thanks to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.